This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. George W. Bush met with White House aides and consulted with Dick Cheney in preparation for their appearance before the September 11th commission Thursday morning, administration officials said. Commission interviews with President Bill Clinton and Al Gore were taped, but the White House has demanded that the two men appear jointly in private and not be under oath, with no stenographer, no recordings, no video cameras, no transcripts. And they originally sought to limit the time of questioning and number of questions. Many believe that Bush must have something to hide, is fearful of going it alone, or incapable of answering pointed questions about being personally responsible for one of the greatest national security failures in American history, despite dozens of warnings. Senator John Kerry, the presumed Democratic nominee for president, acknowledged Tuesday that Bush had knowingly exaggerated evidence that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, insisting that Bush had made colossal mistakes before, during, and after the war. "We know they gave misinformation, and yet the president says he's never made a mistake," he said, referring to Bush's statement during a news conference this month that he could not remember a single mistake made during his administration. "I think the president has made some colossal mistakes," Kerry said, "not the least of which is taking our nation to war in a way that was rushed, that is putting our young soldiers at a greater risk than they ought to be, without a plan to win the peace." Planned Parenthood Federation of American President Gloria Felt today demanded that Karen Hughes apologize for invoking 9/11 in her attempt to defend Bush's anti-choice policies. "It is outrageous to suggest that those of us who challenge this administration's attacks on reproductive rights and access do not value life and human dignity. Indeed, it is because we value life and human dignity that we support a woman's right to choice," Felt said today. Speaking in reaction to the more than 1 million men and women gathered for the March for Women's Lives, Hughes had said, "I think after September 11th, the American people are valuing life more."
"It won't happen to me."
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
The California State Highway Patrol, hoping to avoid another epic traffic jam, wants inventors to design and build a gun that can capture would-be suicide jumpers in a spider-like web. "At this point, we're about ready to put out a request for a proposal," Highway Patrolman Tom Marshall said, "and we'll just see if there's some technology that might be usable." The idea was first floated by a local radio talk show host following a 13-hour standoff between cops and a blade-wielding man threatening to jump off the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. The April 2nd incident cost the Highway Patrol an estimated $100,000 in overtime and other expenses. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If George W. keeps telling us that global warming is not happening, and that even if it is, it's nothing to worry about, why are his Pentagon planners warning that, quote, "there is substantial evidence that significant global warming will occur during the 21st century, that this will lead to, quote, an abrupt climate change, and that this change could, quote, destabilize the geopolitical environment, leading to skirmishes, battles, and even war?" Perhaps the disparity between Bush think and the thinking of the Pentagon planners is that planners actually have to deal in some reality, whereas George can simply stick oil money in his campaign pockets and stick his head in the sand on a rising threat that could be globally catastrophic. The Pentagon's warning comes in a report titled "An Abrupt Climate Change Scenario and Its Implications for United States National Security." It was commissioned by Andrew Marshall, a longtime highly regarded official who heads the Department of Defense's Office of Net Assessment. Marshall, who has worked under 5 presidents, is known as the Yoda of the Pentagon. As a DOD spokesman notes, he's the wise one that when we need to think about big things, he's the one we turn to. Nothing is much bigger than global warming, for if it is happening, and practically every independent scientist says it is, it will change everything. The Pentagon's analysis included the possibilities of intense winter storms in the Northeast, an inland sea enveloping part of Northern California, extended drought in crucial agricultural areas, food shortages, lack of fresh water, and energy shortages. It notes that nations with food and water resources may build fortresses around them to stave off have-not nations clamoring for survival. This is Jim Hightower saying, the report does not say that all of this will happen, but that such a scenario is plausible, and that the risk of global warming, quote, should be elevated beyond a scientific debate to a U.S. national security concern. Now, someone read that to George W.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling?
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and republics. Truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom and the American way from coast to coast. Tom Hartman here with you. Beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system. For Sirius listeners, the second and third hour of our program, by the way, is played in the evening. And also the entire 3 hours is replayed on the weekend. On terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org has archives, as well as at tomhartman.com. You'll find selective archives put together by Mike Toth of our program. And you can drop into our chat room from tomhartman.com or go to our message board. Today, in the first hour, our question, should the United States have a mandatory national service program? This is in the news. Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator and former voting machine company president from Nebraska, has come out essentially in favor of a draft. Charlie Rangel has introduced legislation for draft for national service. And the debate is growing as the Army is getting stretched thinner and thinner in Iraq, Afghanistan, and around the world. And so I figured we'd have on, to discuss both sides of this, Dr. Andrew Bernstein, who's been on this program before, one of my favorite guests. Dr. Bernstein is an adjunct professor of philosophy at Pace University and at the State University of New York at Purchase. He's the author of three Ayn Rand titles for Cliff's Notes, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, and Anthem. I read most of Atlas Shrugged when I was a teenager. I reread his Cliff Notes version about 2 years ago. It's just great. I recommend it very highly. And The Penguin's Teacher's Guide to the Fountainhead. He's a member of the Speaker's Bureau, the Ayn Rand Institute, and has spoken to universities including Harvard, Stanford, and Chicago. And you can find that institute at aynrand.org. Dr. Bernstein, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good to be back, Tom.
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
First of all, let me just let you lay out your position here on the draft. Go for
well,
it.
Well, as an objectivist and an admirer of Ayn Rand, I'm a firm believer in the principle of individual rights. I think that's the moral principle upon which this country was based, and consequently, forcing individuals to serve the country is a egregious violation of individual rights. And I think if we're going to defend a free society, I think logically that society has to be free. We need a volunteer military, and draft is basically an institution appropriate to a dictatorship, if not a totalitarian state. So I think it has no place in American society.
Yeah. Okay. So now, back in 1814, Thomas Jefferson
speaking, you know, you started out by saying the ideals that this country was founded on. Jefferson was writing about this, and he suggested that, well, in fact, let me just share a little bit of this letter. This was a letter to James Monroe. He said, you know, that the so-called voluntary armies depend upon a pauper class for their existence. He said, our men are so happy at home that they will not hire themselves out to be shot at for a shilling a day. Hence, we can have no standing armies for defense because we have no paupers to furnish the materials. He went on to note, the Greeks and Romans had no standing armies, yet they defended themselves. The Greeks, by their laws, and the Romans, by the spirit of their people, took care to put into their hands of the rulers no such engine of oppression as a standing army. Their system was to make every man a soldier and oblige him to repair to the standard of his country whenever that was reared. This made them invincible, and the same remedy will make us so. This is Thomas Jefferson arguing for universal draft, universal conscription, for a universal militia, actually. He noted that such a system of universal service, quote, was proposed to Congress in 1805, this when he was president, and subsequently, I'm still quoting Jefferson, and on the last trial was lost, I believe, by a single vote only. Had it prevailed, what was now happened would not have happened in the War of 1812. Instead of burning our capital, we should have possessed theirs in Montreal and Quebec. We must now adopt it, and all will be safe. He goes on to note that there's three quarters, in 1814, three quarters of a million American men would have qualified for a draft, and says, quote, with this force properly classed, organized, trained, armed, and subject to tours of a year of military duty, we would have no more to fear for the defense of our country than those who have the resources of despotism and pauperism. Aren't you recommending, Dr. Bernstein, pauperism? That if we were to pursue the absolute laissez-faire objectivist economics, where the corporate owners can basically do whatever they want, there are no government protections for workers, unions are essentially banned or at least not supported by law, by the force of law, as corporations are supported by the force of law, that you have this great pauper class and it provides fodder for an army.
Well, no, actually, I disagree with all of that. I think under laissez-faire, neither unions nor corporations would properly be supported by the government.
But a corporation can only come into being by virtue of a government.
No, somebody, I'm talking about somebody start their own business, be an entrepreneur, be subject to the criminal laws. I think the purpose of the government is to protect individuals against criminals, against the initiation of force or fraud. So if Ford or Microsoft or whoever it is guilty of initiating force or fraud, then the corporate executives are guilty and they should go to jail. But I don't think the government should initiate force to support corporations or unions. And furthermore, I think the whole history of capitalism shows that the freer a society is, the wealthier it is, the larger a middle class there is. So certainly no paupers under capitalism. Paupers exist under the non-capitalist system. And I think free men defend their country.
Let me interrupt you.
Just Pearl Harbor or...
I got that. Let me just interrupt you for a second, because you're stacking things one on top of the other, and it's difficult to just kind of let them all slide by. The most recent one in that long list was that the freer a country is, the greater its middle class. Studies on livability that have been done by the United Nations and other groups, Forbes magazine actually cited one, indicate that in countries like, that Norway actually has the highest standard of living in the world. Countries like Norway, Sweden, many of the Scandinavian countries and the Western European countries have a much larger middle class than we do here in the United States. We have a much larger working poor and poverty class. And that one of the reasons why is directly because of government intervention, number one. And number two, I'd like you to answer. You had said that it doesn't require government to create a business, and yet, have you ever started a corporation? I mean, I have a number of times, and you have to go down to the Secretary of State's office. A corporation is an artificial entity that comes into being by virtue of authorization of government.
But that's not the point. First of all, let me absolutely repudiate that first point. I mean, the per capita income in the United States is vastly higher than in any of those semi-socialist countries in Scandinavia. That such a claim is just absurd. And all you have to do is go to Sweden or Norway, and you can see the difference.
Well, I lived in Germany for a year, and
America
I can...
And the standard of living in those countries. And those countries are relatively free. I mean, they don't have any kind of dictatorship like, the third world countries, and they're still not as wealthy as in America. And the second point is you're talking about a technical legal point regarding corporations. What I'm saying is that under a proper laissez-faire system, a corporation or any other business is subject to the criminal law, period, just like you or I. So there's no need for protective agencies or, like the FTC or the SEC. There's no need for regulatory agencies. Let the companies do their business. If they initiate force or fraud, you subject them to the criminal law. That's it.
We don't need to regulate corporations. By the way, if our listeners want to join in, our number is 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein of the Ayn Rand Institute, ayn rand.org. So you're suggesting that there essentially, it sounds like what this boils down to. I mean, you know, we've gone back and forth before on the nature of
yes,
capitalism
yes.
and corporations, and we can revisit that some other time. But let's stick to the draft for this one. It sounds to me like you're suggesting that a draft is a form of slavery, that basically there is no social contract in a nation. So you're suggesting that by being born into the United States and continuing to be a citizen on an ongoing basis of the United States, that I have no obligation to defend the nation?
Yeah, that's correct. I think that individuals have inalienable rights, that the purpose of the government is to protect those rights. I think you can't defend freedom by initiating programs appropriate to dictatorships. And I think that when free societies are attacked, free men and women will volunteer to defend the country out of their own self-interest because they want to defend their own freedoms, their own lives, and the freedom and lives of the people they love and of the country they love. And I would say on a personal note, Tom, even a devout coward like me, I mean, you know, who would not have fought in Vietnam because I did not see any threat to American freedom or lives by a communist takeover of South Vietnam. But I would certainly fight in this war because the Islamists have made very clear they want to murder as many American civilians as possible, and so my life literally depends, not just my freedom, my very life depends on fighting this war and winning it.
In Iraq?
Oh yeah, in Iraq, but mostly Iran. Iran is the regime that's responsible for more terrorism against America than Iraq.
Actually, aren't the Saudis the major financiers of all this?
I think President Bush is fighting the wrong war here.
Yeah, aren't the Saudis the major not to digress too much, but aren't the Saudis the major financiers of this? I mean, 15 of the 19 guys who flew those planes were Saudis.
Yeah,
the Saudis who are funding the Wahhabist schools.
I agree that the Wahhabist mentality in Saudi Arabia and the Saudi regime are certainly enemies of America and need to be dealt with very forcefully. And President Bush is very mistaken if he thinks that the Saudi regime is friendly to America.
Okay, but back to your earlier point. You said that if the United States is attacked, that if, you know, free people will rise up. If the United States was seriously attacked, let's say that, you know, Canada or Mexico were to enter into an unholy alliance with China or Russia or something like that, and just, you know, one day, boom, we were suddenly being invaded, you really think that everybody could just rise up and tomorrow morning you'd have an army? I mean, doesn't it take a while? I went through basic training. I mean, it takes a while to go through basic training. It takes a while to learn how to use weaponry, to establish an army, to organize things. And that's why Jefferson was suggesting everybody should do 1 year of military service and then be a permanent part of a militia, basically a National Guard.
Well, I understand that it takes time to develop an army, and I think American history shows that in most cases, we were woefully unprepared militarily for every war we've ever been involved in, certainly including World War II. But I think a standing army is not incompatible with an army on a volunteer basis. You can have a standing army on a volunteer basis.
As long as you have a pauper class.
As a just war, a war of self-defense is initiated. But furthermore, don't forget also, Tom, a main way of defending a free society against its attackers is through superior technology. I mean, the weapon systems that a free society can develop are vastly superior to what comes out of a totalitarian state or the dictatorships who threaten us.
And that didn't do us much good in Vietnam. I mean, these guys were, you know, in rice paddies using old Soviet AK-47s, and we had the
right,
fanciest
exactly.
technology in the world, and they kicked us out.
Yeah, but that's because the presidents involved, Johnson and Nixon. First of all, I didn't think we should have been in Vietnam, but militarily, the presidents involved did not let the U.S. military fight the war to win.
But we dropped more bombs.
Korea, Vietnam, War, and Iraq.
We dropped more bombs in Vietnam during that conflict than were dropped in all of World War II.
Tom, an invasion of North Vietnam the way MacArthur invaded North Korea would have won the war. But
MacArthur couldn't pull it off with North Korea.
What's that?
MacArthur couldn't hold North Korea.
Well, that was it, a million Chinese troops? came in after that. And,
sure, and
when the Americans counterattacked and pushed them back to North Korea, the North Koreans sued, and the American president, I don't remember if it was Truman or Eisenhower, I think it was Eisenhower, at that point, basically just went to the bargaining table and left the status quo instead of kicking the communists out of North, you know.
Well, I'd like to get back to this issue.
And what President Bush has done with Saddam Hussein and back in 1991.
Yeah, okay. I'd like to get back to the issue of the draft and the social contract. I know you can only be with us until the bottom of the hour, so we've only got about 5 minutes. We've got to take a break here. It's Dr. Andrew Bernstein, IanRand.org. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere. A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
it seemed that life was so wonderful and comfortable, 'cause we were powerful and in control. Then daddy's judges came through and they appointed me the president, with no precedent, Pennsylvania Avenue resident.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein of AyonRand.org, the Ayn Rand Institute. Dr. Bernstein, if senators' sons and daughters and the president's daughters and the vice president's daughter were serving in our active duty military, do you think that we would be in an optional war in Iraq?
Well, I have no idea, Tom. I can't speculate on personal motives of
don't you think then that it's more appropriate that we have a military that reflects a broad cross section of Americans rather than what Thomas Jefferson referred to as pauper hirelings?
With all due respect to Thomas Jefferson, who I admire tremendously, I think he's inaccurate there. I suspect that the U.S. military today, on a volunteer basis, does not tend to be paupers. I think, from what I've read anyway, there's a good deal of many educated people in the U.S. military today. I've heard that we had the most educated military of our history.
Yeah, and one of the reasons is because so many people have joined the National Guard are joining the Army in order to get the benefits of being able to pay for college. Or they're in the middle of college and they've run out of money and that this is a way to get it. I mean, you look at all the story, like, you know, Jessica Lynch, you know, she wanted to finish her education and become a teacher. The only way that she could do that was to join the Army. Over and over and over we hear these stories.
Tom, I think that's a legitimate way for the Army to attract high-quality people, is to, basically it's a free market competitive basis, because people could go to work and get good jobs. And
so if you have an absolutely
they have to offer benefits to bring in qualified people. I think that's a good thing.
So if we get rid of unions and we get rid of collective bargaining, and we get rid of the minimum wage, then
unless they fear there'll be unions, there's going to be government and coercive unions.
Right. And so if we get rid of all that stuff and we basically have a laissez-faire system where corporations can do whatever they want, and you end up with a desperately poor working class, and you get people who are so poor and so desperate that they are willing to sign up to be shot at in order to get money. I mean, look at this guy who was just taken hostage working for Halliburton. Not a dissimilar situation. He was just being paid a lot more. He's being paid $100,000 rather than $16,000. But we've got people in the Army who are being paid $16,000 a year to be shot at because they were just trying to earn a little extra money, not because they wanted to join. I agree with you. There are some people who are like professional military families. I believe that they are in the minority among the enlisted men. In particular,
well,
perhaps.
Several things I disagree with. First of all, you're obviously a very knowledgeable person and educated. You must know some economics. You know, under industrial capitalism, the output of goods is so great that the supply is great, prices come down, real wages rise. Capitalism doesn't produce paupers. It ended the pauperdom in Europe and everywhere else where, under the Ancien regime, and everywhere else capitalism has been instituted, like in the Asian tigers. There's no, rabble of paupers. That's just empirically false. And morally, individuals will join the military based on their own choice for whatever their reasons are. It's their right to make that choice. And I'm glad that we have people who choose to join the military for whatever reason they volunteered to do so. It's none of my concern, because we have a world in the 20th century in which there were Nazis, communists, and Islamists, all of whom wanted to destroy us. Yeah. So I'm very glad we have people who join the Marines on a volunteer basis and constitute an outstanding fighting force like the U.S. Marine Corps, which is purely voluntary, or used to be mostly voluntary anyway.
Yeah, okay. We have Dave in Humboldt County with, we've only got about 30 seconds here left. Can you stick around for another 5 minutes, Dr. Bernstein, or do you have to go here at the bottom?
I need to leave at 12:30.
You need to go now, okay. All right, Dave, I'll take your call after the break. We've been talking with Dr. Andrew Bernstein. Dr. Bernstein, thank you very much for being with us today.
Anytime, Tom, and if I can get it real quick, my website is
sure.
Just andrewbernstein.net.
Andrew Bernstein, Bernstein.
Yes, as well as ARI's website, AyonRand.org, which I appreciate you mentioning.
Great. Okay, thanks for being with us.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Tom.
It. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. I'm sorry, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For 35 years, John Kerry's fought for his country.
We need to get some things done in this country. Affordable health care, rolling back tax cuts for the wealthy, really investing in our kids. That's why I'm running for president.
John Kerry, the military experience to defend America. A new plan to create jobs and put our economy back on track.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message because it's time to put opportunity in the hands of all Americans.
John Kerry, a new direction for
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. April 28th is Workers' Memorial Day, commemorating the 33rd anniversary of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Act. And today, people around the world remember those who have suffered and died on the job. According to government statistics, each year, at least 4.7 million U.S. workers are injured or become sick at work. More than 60,000 die from occupational illnesses, and nearly 6,000 are killed on the job. The AFL-CIO is urging OSHA to examine new workplace hazards and increase penalties for companies that repeatedly break OSHA laws.
American companies can mistreat American workers without fear, so long as it takes place outside the country. Such is the conclusion of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in a dispute between two tree trimmers and their former employer, Pennsylvania-based Asplund Tree Expert Company. The two were fired in 1998 while on a job in Canada and stranded there with no way back to the States. When they did return, the two sued Asplund. A district court judge found the company violated U.S. labor law, and the National Labor Relations Board ordered Asplund to reinstate the fired men. But the appeals court ruled it lacks the power to do that. NLRB jurisdiction ends at the board. Order.
According to the latest issue of Newsweek, American troops in Iraq are fatally undersupplied. The lack of heavy tanks and body armor has led to a record 115 U.S. soldier deaths and 879 injuries in April. Some Pentagon officials blame Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's lighter is better military strategy for the lack of adequate equipment in Iraq. A study by an Army defense consultant suggests that of the 686 Americans killed in Iraq so far, one in four might be alive today if they had had stronger armor. By the Army's own estimates, they're about 1,800 heavily armored vehicles short. Almost all U.S. soldier deaths have occurred while in unprotected light-skinned Humvees. The Army says it needs more money to protect its soldiers, and the cost of military operations in Iraq is already topping $4.7 billion a month. Adjusted for inflation, the Vietnam War cost about $5 billion a month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the information security systems in the world will not stop a bar of chocolate. That's the finding of an informal survey conducted in London recently for a European trade conference on information security. Random samplings of people walking through a subway station found one-third of them would freely disclose their office computer's username and password to a complete stranger, and more than two-thirds of those polled broke down if bribed with candy.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, indeed, folks. People got to be free.
Wrong accent, right? 27 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. That's me. This is Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, all over the planet. And we're talking about universal conscription. My opinion is that we really should have a system of national service where the military is only one piece of it. So I wouldn't call it a draft. I would call it a universal service provision where when you graduate from high school, You, male or female, you serve a year for your country. Whether it's planting trees, working in a hospital, helping build bridges, you know, WPA type things, or whether it's serving in the military, you would have your choice. But there's a year of service. It has to do with the social contract, that thing that the Ayn Rand folks, the libertarians, the objectivists, and the conservatives, by and large, don't believe exists, the social contract, the obligation to participate in our government, to be part of our government. And to pay back, you know, that we have, you are getting the blessings of liberty, the blessings of American democracy. And part of the social contract, in my opinion, is that, you know, you have to give something back for that. It's a necessary thing. Dave in Humboldt County has some thoughts on this. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Tom. I had wondered, and really, I guess I'd be a prior guest, but it would be applying now, too. In a situation in which a few really exploitive, greedy, wealthy people found ways to accumulate almost all the wealth for themselves, and an environment in which the overwhelming majority of people lack basic needs, medical care, food, and such, is that an acceptable development? And if not, what do we do?
Well, I personally don't think it's an acceptable development, and I don't think that our founders did either. Jefferson and Madison both wrote at length about the corrosive influence of excessive wealth in a society. You've got a situation where Bill Gates alone has wealth equal to the bottom 25% of Americans. If you aggregate them together, if you take Bill Gates and the Walton family together, they have wealth greater than the bottom 40% of Americans. And you know, the question then becomes, is that kind of wealth, and then you add to that the wealth that's held by corporate powers in the United States, who, because of perversions of the law dating back to 1886, have been allowed to participate in politics and the political process, and thus spin and skew laws to their benefit. You have to ask the question, is this good for democracy, or was Madison right that that such things are corrosive to democracy?
You really have to program the public to buy into this. It is convincing your slaves that they live under the best of all systems. And
it's a recent thing. I mean, you know, Roosevelt raised the top wage for people who, in today's dollars, earn more than $2 or $3 million a year, the equivalent thereof, up to 90%. You know, in income tax, and also, the inheritance tax goes all the way back to revolutionary times in various forms, but, you know, solidly defined the inheritance tax, you know, these guys are saying, well, it hurts family farms. No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. You know, you've got to have millions and millions of dollars before it kicks in, and then even then there are exemptions and things for farms, but the point is that you're right. The cons in this country have reprogrammed people to believe that those reforms that Roosevelt brought about in the 1930s that led to the golden age of the American middle class from the 1940s up until the 1980s, when we had a greater percentage of our people living in the middle class than ever before in history, those explicit reforms, which included highly progressive taxation, which discouraged corporations from paying multi-million dollar salaries to CEOs, and then all that pressure to basically screw employees, you know, to squeeze down labor costs in order to squeeze that out, and so on. That those things are, you know, it's like an amnesia. It's like we've forgotten. Well, the reality is you've got a whole generation of people who don't remember what it was like in the 50s and the 60s.
On so many different frequencies, I hear us being told that to expect the wealthiest of people to contribute or to give back is socialism, un-American. You shouldn't be living in this country if you think like that. And I think that's what we're being told.
It's unfortunate. I mean, socialism is when the government owns the means of production. And the means of production is an important point because, you know, the big argument between Jefferson and Hamilton was that Jefferson believed that if everybody in America, I mean, he had this kind of idealistic notion that if everybody in America had and he changed his mind, by the way, in 1814, later in his life, but up through his presidency, he had this idealistic notion that if everybody had the ability to produce their own food and the basic necessities of life, in other words, they could spin their, or every community anyway, could create its own food and could create its own clothing and things, that you would have forever a nation that would be free and independent and invincible, essentially. You'd have, you know, that a middle class, that would be the middle class, you know, people who were relatively self-sufficient, who were not in debt, who owned their own property, who owned their own means of production, basically farming. And then, you know, as the Industrial Revolution came along, the means of production fell into the hands of increasingly large corporations or wealthy individuals who built factories and mills and things. And then Karl Marx came along and said, oh, this is terrible. You got to take it away from them and give it to, quote, the people. But he meant to a government. You know, it's just, you know, tyranny by government instead of tyranny by the rich. And which is why communism collapsed, but that or socialism, you know. But that's what socialism is, and I'm not advocating that. I don't know, frankly, anybody in American discourse, you know, who's taken seriously, who's advocating that.
Thank you so much, Tom. You've definitely got my attention every day.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. And it's a straw man argument. It's just like George Bush saying, you know, we can stay the course or we can cut and run. Well, I'm sorry, George. Those are not the argument. Nobody is, you know, those are not the specific arguments. Although it's interesting, in today's Wall Street Journal, there's an op-ed piece suggesting maybe we should cut and run. We'll get to that in the second hour of our program. But they set up these phony arguments, these false arguments of, you know, it's either capitalism or socialism. It's not. You know, it's laissez-faire capitalism and controlled or regulated capitalism are different things. We, you know, it's okay for corporations to own the means of production. In my mind, it's just not okay for corporations to own other corporations. It's not okay, as was the law in the United States for more than 100 years of our founding, right across the board up until the 1880s, and in many states right up until the 1950s. It was illegal for corporations to own other corporations. It was, you know, corporations had to be responsible to we the people first. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Gary in Santa Fe is on the line, Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Oh, love your show, as always. I have a suggestion. I doubt that it would really work in real life, but I think it's so disgusting that we send our youngest people who really haven't had time to make up their minds about how things should work in the world to go die for us older people. Well, I'm not that old, but I'm 45, and so maybe they should make the draft, have a draft, but you have to be 45 or older in order to be drafted.
Actually, interesting that you mentioned that it's an odd coincidence. I was just going through Jefferson's letters this morning, and in 1814, when he wrote a long and eloquent argument about this, and he pointed out that in that year there were 750,000 people between the ages of 18 and 45 in the United States, and he felt that all of them in that age group should be part of the national militia. And so, yeah, I don't disagree. And I think that if our military was made up of a greater cross-section, as Bernie Sanders pointed out last Friday, I mean, you know, during the Vietnam War, you had a military, once the draft got going, you had a military that was made out of a broad cross-section of Americans. And look what happens. They stood up and they said, hey, wait a minute. Why are we over there?
Right. It's way too easy for us as people to say, okay, well, let's send our kids over there and fight for us. But, man, if we all had, as 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds had to go over and do something in Iraq and be under those horrible conditions, I think we'd think a lot more clearly we sent people.
Yeah, and even worse than that, it's not just our kids, or it's not even our kids. If our is broadly the middle class of America, the Army is disproportionately made up of people fleeing poverty.
Absolutely. I mean,
thanks for your show, Tom. You're welcome. Thanks
Keep
for the call,
good
Gary.
Work, man.
Yep, I'll do it. I'll do my best. This is something that the founders were very concerned about. And there was this big battle about it. This is something I found really interesting. Back in the 1780s, 1787, as the Constitution was being worked out and the Bill of Rights, Jefferson proposed an amendment that he wanted in the Bill of Rights. There were two of them that never made the Bill of Rights. One was a ban on commercial monopolies, which meant corporations can't own other corporations, corporations cannot monopolize industries. And he was quite explicit about that. He wrote to Madison about it. He wrote to Dumas about it. He wrote to anybody who would listen about this thing between 1787 and basically 1789, during that two-year period as the Bill of Rights was being worked out. He was just really on a rant about this. And the second being that there shouldn't be a standing army. And in fact, in the years of Washington and Adams' presidency, the army bloated up to 300,000 men. Jefferson shrank it down to 3,600 people, closing military bases all over the United States, slashing military spending. And because he felt that a standing army would be a threat to democracy because it would create a professional middle class ultimately. One of two things would happen. Either it would be made up of people fleeing poverty, which he viewed as a moral ill, or it would be made up of a professional middle class, a military class, rather, which ultimately would represent a threat to democracy because historically governments had been overthrown internally by people in their professional military classes. You want an example? Look at Musharraf, Pervez Musharraf, the military strongman who did a coup d'etat in Pakistan, overthrew a democratically elected government, and of course he's now the buddy of the Bush administration. But for a while there, we were holding him at arm's length because he had done this, and it's happened all over the world over and over and over again, and so Jefferson's response, his answer to this, was let's do what Switzerland does, and I mean he didn't say it that way, but it's what Switzerland is doing to this day, and that is everybody is in the army, everybody is the member of a militia, everybody after graduate at a certain age, Jefferson defined the age as 18, has to serve for 1 year in the militia, in a local militia, to be trained in how to use weapons, how military discipline, blah, 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 how to be a soldier. And then they're done, but they must keep a gun in their home, and if the country is ever attacked, they can just, open the closet, grab that gun, step out in front, the whistle blows, the church bells ring, and boom, the entire nation is mobilized. And you have a militia that cannot be overcome. And this, many people argue this is why Hitler never invaded Switzerland. Was because every man in Switzerland is a member of the militia. I'm not sure the top end age, but I know it's in the 40s. So Jefferson was arguing for this, and the arguments became quite hot and heavy as they were working out the Bill of Rights. And, some in the government were arguing that we should have a permanent army, what Jefferson referred to as a standing army. Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, many of the others among the Democratic Republicans, what is now the Democratic Party, argued that there should not be a standing army, that it represented a threat to America, but that there should be a militia. Every local community should have its own militia. And the two remnants of this argument are, number one, our National Guard, which were originally the local militias, and number two, the Second Amendment. And it's real interesting. The Second Amendment, originally as proposed by Jefferson and Dumas and a few others, I don't have the original language right here in front of me, but essentially it said that the United States shall not have a standing army, and that the United States shall have a national militia, that every man between 18 and 45 shall serve in that militia for 1 year and be available to for military service and keep a weapon in his home. And what we ended up with as a result of that battle in Congress was language which is now part of the Constitution. This is the Second Amendment to the Constitution, which says, A well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. In other words, if we're going to have a militia instead of an army, instead of having a professional army, which could become, number one, on the one hand, a threat to democracy, or on the other hand, draw from the very poor, instead of having that, we're going to have a militia. And in order to have a militia, everybody has to have a weapon. And this is the message. I mean, it's just extraordinary how few people in the weapons movement miss this. I mean, because we didn't get the militia. And because we don't have the militia, then this becomes sort of, why do we have this? And then you got the NRA out there arguing, well, everybody should have the right to have an assault weapon. Why? Because there are honorable hunters. And, as John Kerry pointed out, he couldn't imagine hunting Bambi with an AK-47. I don't think anybody else does either. In fact, most states that allow and regulate hunting don't allow you to hunt with assault weapons. So why would you have an assault weapon? Why? Unless we had a militia, and that was the weapon that you were supposed to keep in your home for when you... But we don't. We don't have a militia. And so this is the Second Amendment presumption of a militia becomes irrelevant. By the way, I just wanted to mention, in the second hour of our program, we're going to give away a copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, my new book. And we're going to give it away to a member of our chat room Anybody in the chat room who correctly answers our question in the second hour, rather than having somebody call in, we're going to do this frequently here. I've got a box of books to give away. And so if you want to get into our chat room for our second hour in time to be eligible, you can type in the answer there in real time. The first person to get the right answer to the question. If you want to get into our chat room, go to Tom Hartman, www.tomhartman.com, and just click on the chat room link. That'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If it asks you for a username and password, if you are an AOL or CompuServe member, just put in your AOL or CompuServe username and password. If you're not, you can sign up. There's no charge. They don't ask for a credit card or anything like that. And you can sign up very quickly and get in. They just, you know, you have to do that so that you don't have trolls and weirdos and whatnot. And we'll give away a book. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Expanding oil and gas drilling in the West is pitting one business interest against others. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Oil and gas development is rapidly spreading in Western states, raising tension between the industry and local ranchers and business people. Scott Woodruff operates the Lander Llama Company Wilderness Expeditions. He offers backcountry trips on federal lands in the Wind River and Absarca Ranges in western Wyoming.
I'm not directly affected as of yet. However, it is moving our direction, and I think now is the time to say enough is enough in terms of a rapid expansion without any consideration to the long-term economic loss from visual values.
Like others in the region, Woodruff is not opposed to oil and gas development in general.
However, I am opposed to multiple-use extraction on public lands at the expense of the physical and economic values the Red Desert, for example, offers. To suggest one economic value is more important than the other at the expense of eliminating the visual resource value and possibly the physical environmental value forever, that seems to be an unacceptable multiple-use management plan.
Outdoor recreation, including hunting, fishing, and hiking, is Wyoming's second leading industry behind mining and drilling. But critics say federal policy favors the oil and gas industry over these local businesses. Woodruff says outfits such as his can't survive without unspoiled views and without the wildlife. He says we can't afford to ruin the last of these open spaces in our quest for energy.
I think Aldo Leopold said it best, having to squeeze the last drop of utility out of the land has the same desperate finality as just having to chop up the furniture to keep warm.
That's Scott Woodruff, owner of the Lander Llama Company in Lander, Wyoming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry?
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman program, 4 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894 to register your thoughts, opinions, ideas, suggestions, arguments, rants, raves, rages. Tom in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
There you go. Hey, how come you never put the Evil Destruction on there for one of your theme songs?
I did. It's actually in the rotation. There's just probably 130 songs or so in there. So, but yeah, occasionally it comes up.
Okay, say that speaker you had on there. I thought I found that kind of funny that these people kind of want to make their own rules for when they should engage in military action.
Yeah, welcome to the wonderful world of libertarianism. I mean, everybody thinks the libertarians are so great because they want to legalize drugs and stuff, but the libertarian philosophy is toxic.
How come he was campaigning and protesting when Cassius Clay or Muhammad Ali or the great one was put in prison for refusing to go to war?
Well, he may have been. The problem is that it's the same problem, frankly, that the Marxists had. And you know, the early Trotskyites, and you know, before Lenin and then Stalin essentially took over and crushed all the idealism in the movement, is that they have this idea of a utopian society. They're utopianists, the same, by the way, as the Grover Norquists and the extreme right wing conservatives are utopianists. They believe that it always starts with this phrase, if only everybody would, right? If only everybody would. And
do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, right. They believe that they, you know, we can, and one of the big problems libertarians have is they say, you know, you say to them, well, if you don't like it here, then go someplace else. And they say, well, there are no libertarian countries. Well, there's no libertarian countries because it doesn't work.
There you go.
So I'm sorry.
And also, that 1% at the top, the ones that make all the big bucks, get all the tax breaks.
Yeah.
How many of their kids actually fighting these wars that really see the opposite, the enemy?
Well, none. I mean, you know, it's infinitesimal, and those few who do are in the officer corps. I mean,
I'm just wondering why Ted Nugent, that big loudmouth from Michigan, that is such an avid hunter and such a great white hunter, why isn't he over fighting for the causes that he so strongly believes in?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
he'd probably take on a bunch of people by himself.
There you go. There you go. Tom, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah.
Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Don't forget, in the next hour, we're going to be giving away a copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, to the first person in our chat room who answers correctly our question. You can get there by going to TomHartman.com and clicking on the chat link. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. George W. Bush met with White House aides and consulted with Dick Cheney in preparation for their appearance before the September 11th commission Thursday morning, administration officials said. Commission interviews with President Bill Clinton and Al Gore were taped, but the White House has demanded that the two men appear jointly in private and not be under oath, with no stenographer, no recordings, no video cameras, no transcripts. And they originally sought to limit the time of questioning and number of questions. Many believe that Bush must have something to hide. Is fearful of going it alone or incapable of answering pointed questions about being personally responsible for one of the greatest national security failures in American history, despite dozens of warnings. Senator John Kerry, the presumed Democratic nominee for president, acknowledged Tuesday that Bush had knowingly exaggerated evidence that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, insisting that Bush had made colossal mistakes before, during, and after the war. "We know they gave misinformation, and yet the president says he's never made a mistake," he said, referring to Bush's statement during a news conference this month that he could not remember a single mistake made during his administration. "I think the president has made some colossal mistakes," Kerry said, "not the least of which is taking our nation to war in a way that was rushed, that is putting our young soldiers at a greater risk than they ought to be, without a plan to win the peace." Planned Parenthood Federation of American President Gloria Felt today demanded that Karen Hughes apologize for invoking 9/11 in her attempt to defend Bush's anti-choice policies. "It is outrageous to suggest that those of us who challenge this administration's attacks on reproductive rights and access do not value life and human dignity. Indeed, it is because we value life and human dignity that we support a woman's right to choice," Felt said today, speaking in reaction to the more than 1 million men and women gathered for the March for Women's Lives. Hughes had said, "I think after September 11th, the American people are valuing life more."
"It won't happen to me."
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
"It happened to me."
The California State Highway Patrol, hoping to avoid another epic traffic jam, wants inventors to design and build a gun that can capture would-be suicide jumpers in a spider-like web. "At this point, we're about ready to put out a request for a proposal," Highway Patrolman Tom Marshall said, "and we'll just see if there's some technology that might be usable." The idea was first floated by a local radio talk show host following a 13-hour standoff between cops and a blade-wielding man threatening to jump off the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. The April 2nd incident cost the Highway Patrol an estimated $100,000 in overtime and other expenses. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
St-
Step right up, seniors, for it's time to play Medicare Gotcha. As you know, the drug companies have been ripping off us consumers, charging exorbitant prices in the U.S. for medicines they sell elsewhere for half or even a third as much. Because of public outrage over this gouging, Bush and his Congress had to look like they were doing something. So last year they rammed into law the Medicare Drug Discount Program for senior citizens. The program, which begins in June, is a bedazzling, convoluted, privatized shell game rigged with enough trickery to make a county fair flim-flammer blush. Start with the fact that rather than simply stopping the price gouging, as other countries have done, Bush's program subsidizes it, putting some $139 billion of our tax money into the pockets of the drug giants. Then there's the corporate hucksterism built into the new system. If you think phone company come-ons are confusing, wait till you try to compare the dizzying array of private drug discount plans that'll fill your mailbox. Pharmacy chains, drug companies, insurance peddlers, online firms, and others will try to lure you into taking their card. They'll all offer different enrollment fees, different discounts on their list of drugs, and different lists of drugs that they cover. Not only will each company have its own price list, but grab your wallet. Their prices can change weekly. Yes, this means that a company can hook you into taking its card by offering low prices on the medicines you use most often, then, gotcha, jack up its prices the next week. Well, you say, if they do that, I'll just switch companies. Gotcha again. Bush's law only lets you switch cards once a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, getting the medicines you need ought not to be a game, much less a game rigged to enrich drug industry ripoff artists. It's time for a national health plan in America based on people's needs, not on drug company profits.
Sometimes it takes an army to help one child. It's the Salvation Army, and it needs your help to send needy children to camp this summer. To donate, call 1-800-SALARMY or donate online at 1-800-SALARMY.org. This army can't help a single child without you.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our Wednesday, the 28th of April program. Day 284 since Valerie Plame was outed. We're going to have Joe Wilson on the program here later in the, well, it's going to be next week, I believe it'll be. Day 338 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 923 in the search for the anthrax killer who effectively, single-handedly caused the Patriot Act to be passed, and day 953 in the hunt for Osama bin Laden, the man who legitimized George W. Bush's presidency in many ways. I mean, before 9/11, a lot of people were going, "Hey, is this guy really our president? You know, before he hit the trifecta, as he says, there were a lot of doubts. There still are in many people's minds. What should we do about our quagmire in Iraq? I want to get into some of these issues in this hour. Some interesting clips, some interesting voices we will hear from here, some interesting news. Just to let you know, on the book contest to get the free copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, my new book, which I think is one of the best that I've ever written, by the way, and it's an illustrated, but it's remarkably easy to read and accessible to everybody. The way that we're going to do it is we're going to type into it, because some people are listening, some of the folks in our chat room I know are listening on the internet,
In fact, some of them are even in other countries listening on the Internet. And sometimes when you listen to something on the web, you get a lag over time. In some cases the lag is a few minutes, and so we don't want to give an unfair advantage to those folks listening on terrestrial radio stations. So we're going to type the question in to the chat room, and you can get to the chat room by going to tomhartmann.com, clicking on the chat button. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you're not a member of the forum, type in your AOL or CompuServe screen name or username and your password. If you don't have one, it takes just a couple of minutes to get yourself one. No charge, no obligations, nothing like that. You don't get on a spam list or whatever. And drop in. And we will actually type the question into the chat room and then take the answers there. And then I will tell you on the air what the question was and who won. And the chat room is filling up fast. So not that it wasn't pretty full to begin with. Did you see here now where George Bush has received a new endorsement? This is an interesting development. George Bush has been endorsed by Al-Qaeda. Yes, indeed. It's very interesting. It's who would want George Bush to be elected president? It turns out that our friends at Al-Qaeda have endorsed George Bush. I'll tell you a little more about that later on. Did you see this ad to today's New York Times? Full-page ad run by the folks at MoveOn.org, the MoveOn.org Voter Fund. It says, as George Bush testifies before the 9/11 Commission, MoveOn Voter Fund reminds America of memo Bush received and ignored 5 weeks prior to 9/11. A full-page ad, and here's what it says. Just two sentences. Bin Laden, first of all, in all caps and in quotes, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. And then underneath it says, President Bush received this warning weeks before September 11, 2001. He did nothing. Well, actually, he didn't do nothing. He went out and cleared some brush, and then he went fishing. But anyhow, it points out the ad is based on the title of the Presidential Daily Briefing of August 6, 2001, which the president still claims was not enough of an indication of a terrorist danger. And according to George Bush, he told reporters on February 11th, April 11th, before the actual name of the thing had come out, he told reporters, it said nothing about an attack on America. Verbatim quote from George W. Bush. The Presidential Daily Briefing of August 6th, 2001, said nothing about an attack on America. The title of it was, Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. So, you know, he lied to the reporters. Well, nothing new. The president, Wes Boyd, president of the Move On Voter Fund, said the president and vice president speak before the 9/11 Commission today, and Americans expect the truth. The memo posed to the president in August of 01 couldn't be clearer, and his failure to claim any responsibility is indefensible. This is the same president who invaded Iraq without waiting for UN weapons inspectors to determine whether Saddam Hussein constituted a threat, rushing into an optional war that so far has claimed the lives of more than 700 American soldiers, plus thousands of Iraqi civilians. Even the administration now admits that there were neither dangerous weapons nor an imminent threat from Iraq. Boyd continues, when provided with very clear information that Bin Laden had planned an attack on the United States, President Bush failed to act to protect the American people. Instead, he rushed into war with a nation that posed no threat to the United States, had been disarmed by the United Nations, and had no connection with 9/11. Isn't it amazing that about half of Americans still believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11? I mean, the disinformation campaign run by this administration and faux news is just really quite impressive when you think about it. Really quite impressive. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number, if you'd like to participate in the program. Paul in Upland, California is on the line. Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, I actually have a article from the New York Times that I think your listeners might want to hear. It's entitled, TV to List Combat Dead in Iraq.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Here goes.
Without reading it, can you just tell me what it says?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Basically, Ted Koppel will deliver a brief introduction and then go into more than 530 names of the combat dead in Iraq for the entirety of Nightline.
Wow. That's extraordinary. Are they going to show pictures and things like
yes,
that?
Yes, they're pictures, you know, captions with ages and hometowns. Also, they said also that because of time constraints, Nightline will not include those who died by accident or other causes.
Remarkable. And making it real. Making it real. I don't know if you've noticed the news hour with Jim Lehrer. It used to be the McNeil Lehrer report.
Right.
McNeil, maybe I'm confusing. McNeil is the one who died, and Lehrer is still around. Yeah.
That's right.
Right. They have been every night toward the end of the show. They've been showing a couple of the names of the dead and photos as they get them. And I thought that was very, very well done, very tastefully. I mean, no commentary, just very, very positive and respectful. And something that hasn't been criticized by anybody, to the best of my knowledge. And I wish the mainstream media, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox News, and CNN, I guess the last two are arguably not the mainstream media. Well, what the heck? I wish that they would do the same. I mean, if we can't show coffins, we can only show numbers. Let's at least know who these people are, because to give your life for your country, particularly for an optional war that the president decided on the week after he took office and informed everybody he was going to do, finishing his daddy's unfinished business, or getting oil in the Middle East or whatever, the accumulation of reasons, none of which had to do with in my opinion, the true security of the United States. Because I think that there are, if everybody in America who's driving an SUV or a light truck was driving a car that got average fleet mileage, the average mileage of cars in the United States, which the question we're going to type into the chat room in just a second has something to do with, we would not need any oil from Iraq, and we could cut by three quarters our oil that we're consuming from Saudi Arabia. I mean,
of course we don't, but we go after it because, we're a nation run by oil tycoons?
Well, at the moment, yeah. I mean, the president and vice president are both CEOs of oil companies. Condi Rice has a tanker named after her. She used to work for, was it Chevron? No, it wasn't Chevron. It was the other one. One of the big oil companies, and yeah, there you go. Paul, thanks for the call.
Hey, no problem.
Appreciate it. That's great. That Jim Lehrer is going to do that. That Ted Koppel is going to do that. I'm impressed. His ratings are going to fall through the floor. I think most people after two or three minutes of it will go, okay, I got that. And that's why I think it should be spread out. It should be done every night on the news. But I honor him as doing that. It's an interesting statement. Back to Wes Boyd, he points out that George Bush was briefed at his Texas ranch on the content, former pig farm, on the contents of the August 6, 2001 memo, but earlier this month he claimed the PDB, quote, was no indication of a terrorist threat. This another exact quote from George Bush on April 11th, before the title of the PDB had become public. He said, it was no indication of a terrorist threat. Verbatim quote. But the PDB specifically, the Presidential Daily Briefing, specifically said there were, quote, patterns of suspicious activity in this country consistent with preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks, end quote, with the FBI conducting, quote, approximately 70 full field investigations, end quote, including one into allegations, quote, that a group of bin Laden supporters in the U.S. was planning attacks with explosives, end quote. The president said there was no information about, quote, a time and place of an attack, end quote, but the PDB specifically said the terrorists had engaged in recent surveillance of federal buildings in New York. And, quote, bin Laden told followers he wanted to retaliate in Washington, end quote. That quote from the Presidential Daily Briefing. So they're calling him on it in today's New York Times. I think to some extent it's preaching to the choir. But, you gotta wake folks up. Here, this I find is interesting. An Iranian court... Let me provide the context for this. Just like in the United States, we have had situations where people who have been harmed by, for example, Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden or others. I mean, there have been lawsuits against a number of dictators around the world have filed claims. In fact, there's one going on right now down in Florida, a hot one against one of the South American dictators. I forget his name right off the top of my head, but anyhow, that. People file lawsuits saying, hey, you killed my fill-in-the-blank, relative, uncle, brother, father, cousin, son, and therefore you owe me some reparation. And we've actually, a number of these have been successful in the United States. In fact, the Iraqi hostages, a group of Americans who were held hostage in Iraq back during the Gulf War in 1991, won millions of dollars from the Saddam, from Saddam Hussein, from his government. And George Bush is withholding that money right now. He says it should be used to pay for the war effort instead of giving it to the families who won in court. But that's a whole other story. So anyhow, there's this precedent, and it's being done all over the world all the time. And they just did it in Iran. A court in Iran held a trial because so many Iranians were killed by chemical weapons during the Iran-Iraq war. So they held a trial against the suppliers of those chemical weapons, the United States. An Iranian court has ruled the United States should pay $600 million in compensation for supplying ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons. Iraqi gas attacks killed thousands of Iranians and Iraqi Kurds in the 1980-88 Iran-Iraq War. This during the Reagan and Bush administrations, when Donald Rumsfeld was over there cutting deals with Saddam Hussein, and we were providing Saddam Hussein with weapons of mass destruction, which were used against the Iranians. IRNA, the official Iranian news agency, says the court has ordered that the American government pay the money for furnishing Saddam with chemical weapons to attack Iran. Let's see if that one gets paid. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Walmart doesn't just dominate the discount retail and grocery industries. It's muscling in on a much more lucrative market, campaign contributions. Walmart is currently the second largest overall donor in the 2004 election cycle, according to an analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics, giving 85% of its donations to Republicans and 15% to Democrats. In the 2002 federal election cycle, Walmart came in 71st among the top 100 donors.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he Nureyev? Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans.
And welcome back.
My harpoon and my dirty red bandana.
24 minutes past the hour.
Bobby sang the blues.
Tom Harbin here with you. Well, during the break, we typed the question into the chat room. And the question was, what is the most popular car driven by California legislators? Is it A, the Ford Expedition? B, the Toyota Hybrid Prius? Car that I own, actually. Or C, the Cadillac Seville? And the answer, of course, was A, the Ford Expedition, 12 to 18 miles per gallon. This according to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, article May 5th of last year. And we actually had two winners. One just put in the C really quick, and the other one took the time to type out the name and got that in real quick. And so we gave the second winner we're going to send two books out because it took a little bit more time to type in the name and wanted to honor that. The first, Win for All in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the second, Cardboard Malice, also known as Paul in Upland, California. Paul, who had called into the program a little earlier. So, thank you to the folks in the chat room for participating in our contest today. And welcome to the new members who have dropped in. And I think you'll find it a fascinating place with an interesting group of people. A majority, and congratulations, will be getting the books off to Milwaukee and California to Win for All and to Cardboard Malice. So you get to choose any name you want in a chat room. It's one of the kind of cool things about it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 25 minutes past the hour. A majority of workers at a Walmart store in Weyburn, say it's starting to happen. It's starting to happen here. It started in Canada. Weyburn, Saskatchewan, Canada. A majority of workers at a Walmart store have signed membership cards for a voice on the job with the UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers International. This is the union that is working so hard to unionize Walmart all over the United States. The UFCW has applied to the Saskatchewan Labor Relations Board for certification, or I'm sorry, these people have, with UFCW Local 1400. This is the second UFCW certification request for workers at Saskatchewan Walmart in the last 2 months. The UFCW International President Joe Hansen says, and I quote, "The UFCW offers an alternative for Walmart workers that means better wages, working conditions, and a voice on the job. More Walmart workers than ever before are standing up, and we're standing, and they're standing up with the UFCW." A bit of a plug for the union, but they deserve it. They're out there doing the work. They're plugging away. This is no small job. And you know, the existence of the middle class in the United States, to a large extent, owes its the contemporary American middle class owes its existence to the Wagner Act of 1935 that made such union activity fully legal and possible and brought us the American middle class. I mean, it's just if corporations can organize, if wealth can organize in the form of a corporation, and corporations can organize in the form of conglomerates and in the form of trade associations and chambers of commerce and collectively bargain and lobby government, then labor must be able to organize and have equal power in the workplace. And only that, my friends, only that ultimately will bring about a true solid middle class. And we this is not new and it's not rocket science. It goes back to the guilds of Europe in the 11th century. Well, largely the 12th and 13th century, when the Masons began. They started building these cathedrals, and they got together and they said, okay, you want us to use our expertise to build your cathedrals? You're going to have to pay a decent price. And the first guilds, the early precursors of the unions, were formed, and out of that came some small semblance of a middle class in a working class context. Louise corrects me. Windfall put the whole answer and just spelled it wrong. So Cardboard got a book for correct spelling. Well, good on you. Well done. Anyhow, here we have the giant retailer Walmart. They have a long history, according to UFCW, of reprehensible employment practices, facing charges by women employees for sex discrimination, been found guilty of cheating workers out of their pay. If we can get a union in there, in the Walmart stores, I think that it'll move in a very positive way the quote working poor of America, those who are reduced to working for Walmart and its ilk. And what it does is it sets the floor for everybody else. So it has there's a multiplier effect. When you have a large employer in a community that is unionized, wages throughout the community go up. This is the absolute lesson of history. This would be a great thing if this happens. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
We could build thousands of new schools or hire a million new teachers. We could make sure every child has insurance. Instead, under George Bush, America is alone, spending tens of billions to rebuild Iraq with no plan for success. After 3 years, when is George Bush going to start taking care of America? Shouldn't America be a top priority?
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. April 28th is Workers' Memorial Day, commemorating the 33rd anniversary of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Act. And today, people around the world remember those who have suffered and died on the job. According to government statistics, each year, at least 4.7 million U.S. workers are injured or become sick at work. More than 60,000 die from occupational illnesses, and nearly 6,000 are killed on the job. The AFL-CIO is urging OSHA to examine new workplace hazards and increase penalties for companies that repeatedly break OSHA laws.
American companies can mistreat American workers without fear, so long as it takes place outside the country. Such is the conclusion of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in a dispute between two tree trimmers and their former employer, Pennsylvania-based Asplund Tree Expert Company. The two were fired in 1998 while on a job in Canada and stranded there with no way back to the States. When they did return, the two sued Asplund. A district court judge found the company violated U.S. labor law, and the National Labor Relations Board ordered Asplund to reinstate the fired men. But the appeals court ruled it lacks the power to do that. NLRB jurisdiction ends at the border. Order.
According to the latest issue of Newsweek, American troops in Iraq are fatally undersupplied. The lack of heavy tanks and body armor has led to a record 115 U.S. soldier deaths and 879 injuries in April. Some Pentagon officials blame Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's lighter is better military strategy for the lack of adequate equipment in Iraq. A study by an Army defense consultant suggests that of the 686 Americans killed in Iraq so far, one in four might be alive today if they had had stronger armor. By the Army's own estimates, they're about 1,800 heavily armored vehicles short. Almost all U.S. soldier deaths have occurred while in unprotected light-skinned Humvees. The Army says it needs more money to protect its soldiers, and the cost of military operations in Iraq is already topping $4.7 billion a month. Adjusted for inflation, the Vietnam War cost about $5 billion a month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
All of the information security systems in the world will not stop a bar of chocolate. That's the finding of an informal survey conducted in London recently for a European trade conference on information security. Random samplings of people walking through a subway station found one-third of them would freely disclose their office computer's username and password to a complete stranger, and more than two-thirds of those polled broke down if bribed with candy.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
the man in the funny papers we all know. He lives way back a long time ago.
And now he's president. No, no, I'm sorry. That's a cheap shot there. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 27 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. The White House faces quite a dilemma here in Iraq. It's not an easy one. There are a lot of issues, though, in this election. I thought that John Kerry really captured this well in a comment he made yesterday. Let me just play this very quickly for you. It's a short piece.
I think truth is on the line in this election. The truth that a president shares with the American people, the truth of how we go to war, the truth of choices about our lives, the truth of how we improve our lives and deal with the issues facing our citizens. And if you don't believe that this election is the most important in our lifetime, then all you have to do is look at the stories about the millions of middle-class families in our country who are struggling to get ahead, unlike at any time in the recent modern history of our economy.
Good comment there, in my opinion. And, you know, he went on in that speech to add this comment.
The American people have been seduced for the last 20 years into voting for slogans that have very little to do with their job.
This is remarkable because the slogans have been coming mostly from right-wing radio, in my opinion. But in fact, I'm going to start this one over again because this is just right on topic, and it is so much about like the false choices that I pointed out. Where, you know, Bush says, "Well, you know, it's we're going to stay the course because we're not going to cut and run," as if those are the only two choices, for example. And they're slogans. They're not choices. Those are just slogans.
The American people have been seduced for the last 20 years into voting for slogans that have very little to do with their job, with their income, with their education system, with their health care, with the air they breathe, the water they drink, and the quality of life in America and our safety and security in the world. Those are the principal issues of this campaign.
Yeah, well said. And you know, are we going to continue to vote for slogans or not? And particularly when it comes to Iraq, there's a fascinating piece in today's Wall Street Journal, which I want to get to in just a moment, and an interesting piece in the International Herald Tribune yesterday, which was reprinting it. It was actually originally first printed in the Moscow Times. So, you know, consider the source. This is, you know, Russia is an ally of ours now. Old Vlad Putin, Vladimir, when George looked into his eyes, he said he saw a man that he understood, a man that he could do business with, a man he trusted. So here's this op-ed piece that was published in the International Herald Tribune. It's the international, you know, you travel all around the world, the paper that you get is the International Herald Tribune. It used to be jointly published by the New York Times and the Washington Post. And the Washington Post recently sold their interest in it, I believe, to the New York Times. Might have been the other way around, but I'm pretty sure it's now the Times that owns it. And it's like kind of America's newspaper everywhere in the world. The White House faces an insoluble dilemma, they said. It can leave Iraq, it cannot leave Iraq, and it cannot stay. In chess, this quandary is called zugzwang. When it's your turn to move, but all possible moves will weaken your position. U.S. interests would be best served by admitting defeat and getting out now. For Bush and his clan, this would be political suicide, however, and they don't seem to be the kind of people who are willing to sacrifice their own ambitions for the common good. And perhaps, I will add parenthetically, perhaps also John Kerry would not. We'll see. Bush, and they get back to the editorial, Bush will drag out the war, increasing U.S. troop strength in Iraq. This will lead to even greater loss of life on both sides, to animosity and the growth of Muslim radicalism. If Bush wins a second term in November, he will spend the next 4 years helplessly trying to cope with the problems he has created, and in the end, his attempts will lead to catastrophe. This is coming from the country that faced the same thing in Afghanistan. Should the Democrat John Kerry prevail, they continue, he will face a no-win situation. If he sticks to Bush's policy in Iraq, he will rouse the ire of many of his core supporters. If he decides to pull out U.S. troops from Iraq, he will be blamed for defeat. Whatever happens, the outcome will have serious domestic political consequences for the United States. The longer the war lasts,
the harder it will be for everyone involved to deal with its consequences. And this is becoming, well, it's not becoming, it right from the get-go. Bush's optional war in Iraq is an issue which has polarized Americans. And the spin on the right-wing side is really starting to get to some of the people who even supported the war early on, like Joe Biden, the Democrat from Delaware, who now, looking back on it, say, you know, this was a mistake. For example, here's Joe Biden was the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. Mark Grossman was testifying before Congress, and he made a comment, and Joe Biden took him to task for it. And I thought this was absolutely brilliant. I wanted to share this with you. This is just so spot on. Here's Joe Biden, who, in my opinion, is one of the most brilliant members of Congress.
I know that people say, oh, they're...
But let me just start this. It starts out not with Joe Biden, but with Mark Grossman. He's the he works like three levels down from Colin Powell in the Secretary of State's office.
I know that people say, oh, they're only little numbers and they're from, you know, odd countries. But I don't think we ought to denigrate.
In fact, let me start over and set it up. He's talking about our so-called allies in Iraq, the alliance of the bill, you know, the billing of the willing, whatever. Anyhow, here he starts.
I know that people say, oh, they're only little numbers and they're from, you know, odd countries. But I don't think we ought to denigrate the contribution that the coalition makes.
Now you hear that? This I don't think we ought to denigrate the contribution that the coalition makes. You know, over and over and over again, you will hear that coming out of the mouth of right wingers and apologists for this administration. And Joe Biden just cleans it up.
Odd countries, but I don't think we ought to denigrate the contribution that the coalition makes.
I wish
here.
You guys would stop this. No one's denigrating. This always happens. We talk about, you know, when we say there's no real coalition, you guys always say, well, you're denigrating the Hondurans or you're denigrating. I'm not denigrating. They're wonderful, brave soldiers. But let's get something straight. They are hardly a blip on the screen of security. We have no major powers there. We have Great Britain there with what, 6,500 troops? The people in my state think Great Britain has 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 people. They got 6,500 troops there.
Did you know that?
We got 140,000 Americans, 6,500 Brits, no Spaniards. The Polish minister on the way out says, whether it happens or not, we have to consider whether we pull out the Polish division. Hopefully that will not happen. We have a minor little hemorrhage going on right now. So come on. I mean, a coalition is a coalition is a coalition. That's like me saying I'm going to have a baseball team where I'm going to play center field and I got eight other little leaguers on the team with me.
Yeah. So it's... Go get him, Joe. I have to say I have so much admiration for Joe Biden. And here, you know, and this is a guy. Here are his thoughts on Iraq. I mean, this is his position on Iraq.
We cannot want a representative government for the Iraqis more than the Iraqis want it. And the premise upon which I continue to support this, what hopefully history will judge as a noble undertaking, is because I believe that the vast majority of the Iraqi people want a representative government.
And, you know, hopefully he's right. Hopefully he's right. And time will tell. We shall see. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call. The Bush administration, according to Prince Bandar, if you caught this last Sunday, his interview with Tim Russert, he said that we could have saved billions of dollars. We wouldn't have had to have any war at all. I mean, we're spending $4.6 billion a month right now. The Vietnam War cost an average of $5 billion a month. We're spending $4.6 billion and just wiped out the U.S. Treasury. Led to the hyperinflation that Jimmy Carter had to deal with. Anyhow, Bandar says that if we had just spent $200 million, that's two-tenths of $1 billion, to continue the salaries of the Iraqi army and kept them in place, we wouldn't have had an insurgency, we wouldn't have had a war, we wouldn't have had any blowback, and the transition would have been easy. And he says that he told George Bush that early on, and he was ignored. 1-866-889-8894. John in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
One thing, I tend to
I like Joe Biden, and he's light years ahead of much better than people in the Bush administration. He's kind of a proponent of American exceptionalism, though, that, you know, we are the one country throughout the world that can give stability, and it's a curious thing. He talked about Iraqis wanting to have a representative government. If that's true, and they quickly, the representative government quickly decides they want no U.S. bases, military, anywhere in the country, and they want them out in 6 months, would we do that, and would Joe Biden agree to that?
I think he may well. The last time Louise and I were in Washington, D.C., we met with Joe Biden, and among others, and listened to a short talk by him. He's a very pragmatic guy, and this really shouldn't be about Joe Biden. It should be more about the Iraqi war. But this piece in the Wall Street Journal brings this up, and what I've been kind of working towards. General William E. Odom, who is no peacenik, broadly speaking. He works for the conservative Hudson Institute, you know, a right-wing think tank. He was hired there by Mitch Daniels, who was Bush's budget director, former budget director. And his office displays photos of Ronald Reagan, under which Mr. Odom directed the National Security Agency, the NSA, the super spies, right, the spooks. They had a bigger salary than the CIA. This guy was the director of it. And he says now that it is delusional, to believe we can, quote, stay the course, and that will achieve President Bush's goal of reordering the Middle East by building a friendly democracy in Iraq. He argues this from this column in the Capital Journal column by John Harwood in today's Wall Street Journal. Former general sees staying the course in Iraq is untenable. He says he argues that the U.S. should remove its forces from that shattered country as rapidly as possible. Here's Odom's exact words. He says, "We have failed. The issue is how high a price we're going to pay, less by getting out sooner or more by getting out later." And, he says, anybody that's pro-American cannot gain legitimacy. This is the conundrum. It will be a highly illiberal democracy inspired by Islamic culture, extremely hostile to the West, and probably quite willing to fund terrorist organizations. That's what's going to happen. And we go on, but can't U.S. troops there tamp down such hostile activity? Asked John Harwood. Well, yes, he says, but at a cost of rising hostility to the U.S. throughout the region. Odom says it probably will radicalize Saudi Arabia, and it could easily radicalize Egypt. See, this is what Mubarak warned George Bush about in the beginning, was that if we went into Iraq, we would create 100 Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Ladens. And it seems that now the generals are saying the same thing. What are your thoughts on that, John? You think we should cut and run, to use George's phrase?
Well, try and get the United Nations involved, somewhat to what Kerry's saying, but not quite so emphasis on the military that he seems to still have. But one thing, I'll quickly get off, but Kerry is at an enormous disadvantage as far as the cable and the major news media. They basically take the Republican talking points and repeat them ad nauseum, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and that is such a humongous hurdle for him to get over. I don't know if he'll be able to do it.
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge. And to what extent, Americans are going to buy into this. Carl in our chat room says Joe Biden is rumored as Secretary of Defense for the Kerry administration. Interesting point. Anyhow, John, thank you. John in Santa Fe, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho is on the line. Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. When you were talking about Biden's quote about the denigrating, and when he said get off of it, I keep thinking about that with the National Guard. This whole thing where Kerry is, the war record, and when it's mentioned,
was it ribbons or medals?
Denigrating is the new echo point.
Yeah, yeah. Was it ribbons or medals that he threw? I mean, they're trying to absolutely refocus attention away from the real issues and onto minutia.
It is, and the trouble is, you can't unring the bell, and when you ring a bell in an echo chamber, it is absolutely massive. I just, the whole tone, the Republicans have the words. And if Kerry ought to be lobbing bombs, as far as I'm concerned, saying such outrageous things that they have to cover him, And then he ought to say, prove me wrong.
Yeah, I remember back.
And let him figure out a way to disprove a negative.
Yeah, I remember back during the Bush-Dukakis election when a friend of mine or an acquaintance of mine, a guy that I know, you know, have done business with, who is an NLP trainer, as am
right.
I'm certified as an NLP practitioner and trainer, was hired by the Bush campaign to advise them on their advertising strategies. And he went in and he talked about, you know, submodality shifts and, you know, always put these pic, you know, if you're going to put a picture of your opponent on, make it fuzzy or make it black and white and it'll stick in people's mind that he's less than fully human and make your own pictures, you know, and have the qualitative differences between the pictures, have qualitative differences between the music when you play back and forth and all these things. And they
right.
did that brilliantly with Dukakis. I mean, they anchored the Willie Horton ads. They set up a particular type of music, a particular type of photography, a particular type of black and whiteness to them. And then they ran those Dukakis with those same what I call production
right.
values, and everybody just linked it together. And John Kerry needs to hire somebody who understands NLP.
I hear the music coming up.
Yeah.
Let me throw out something for you to consider.
Okay, you got 5 seconds, Roy.
What's happening to the youngsters in Iraq from
yeah.
a mind development standpoint?
Oh, it's a disaster.
Maybe take a segment sometime at this.
I'll talk about it after the break. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Floating houses and water buffalo were the mainstays of life for people who once inhabited the vast marshes of Iraq. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The southeastern corner of Iraq was once a huge wetland, and some people believe it was the biblical Garden of Eden. For more than 5,000 years, a people known as the Marsh Arabs lived there. But today, the wetlands and the unique culture of the Marsh Arabs are in danger, and scientists are working hard to restore them. Michelle Stevens works on an international project called Eden Again. She says more than 90% of Iraq's original wetlands have dried out, and most of the people who live there have moved away. That's due in part to dams upstream in the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. It's also due to attacks by Saddam Hussein. In the early 1990s, Hussein intentionally drained the marshes, poisoned water, and burned villages. Stevens says the Marsh Arabs once had a beautiful way of life.
They lived on these floating islands of reeds, and their homes were built of reeds. People would go visit each other house to house on their canoes, so everything was waterway. Everything was moving between water.
The reeds in the marshes grew as tall as 20 feet, and the people there wove their homes out of the tallest ones. Stephen says the Marsh Arabs also raised water buffalo. The animals slept on the floating mats where the people lived, and their owners sang to them at night. Stephen says the former inhabitants of Iraq's vast wetland had a knowledge of ecology and practical living that's a true cultural treasure. She says the Eden Again Project is trying to find some of the people who moved away to interview them and learn about their lives. The project also wants to help the people who still live in the former wetland restore the marshes and their way of life. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, can't get fooled again.
People think I'm a moron. What if they only knew the depth of my evil genius? And I can be stupid whenever I need to, yeah. In my midnight confessions,
and welcome back. It's 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And 1-866-889-8894, our number. I'm going to talk about this tomorrow, by the way, and answer the question that Roy asked. What does war do to children? What is the impact on brain development? How is it affecting kids? Because it takes more than 2 minutes to answer it. It's not a long speech, but we got a short time here, and we got a caller on the line who I want to bring on. Paul in Santa Fe's on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
I can. You're live and on the air.
Great. My question is, you know, you were saying how we're spending all this money in Iraq, and my question is, why? You know, with the oil that's coming out of Iraq, are we getting any of that?
Well, that's a good question. It is a tightly held secret how much the oil is being sold for and who's controlling the money, and for reasons beyond my comprehension. And the best estimate, by the way, of the amount of oil that I've been able to see in the news, various newspapers, news reports, and, you know, people testifying and whatnot, was that Iraq was capable of generating about $2 billion a month in oil revenues. And it seems that they're pumping at about half capacity right now. I mean, they just had one of their things blown up. So that would be about $1 billion a month. But we're spending $4.6 to $4.9 billion a month. So there does seem to be a disparity. Even though Wolfowitz, back in his testimony before Congress, before the war started, said that it would be a self-financed war. He was wrong.
He was very wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, just like LBJ was wrong after the Gulf of Tonkin, when the ship got hit in the Gulf of Tonkin, and he went before Congress and said, you know, this is not going to be a big deal. It won't take us long. It's a little third world nation. You know, we'll just go in there. We'll take care of it. Yeah, right. You never underestimate the power of nationalism. Never, never, never. Paul, got to move along.
Very good. I appreciate you, sir.
Thanks for calling. Natalie in Los Alamos. Natalie, we've just got to... Actually, I think we're just out of time. Natalie, I'm going to ask you to hold. We'll pick you up in the next hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Broadcasting from high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. Coast to coast. your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. George W. Bush met with White House aides and consulted with Dick Cheney in preparation for their appearance before the September 11th commission Thursday morning, administration officials said. Commission interviews with President Bill Clinton and Al Gore were taped, but the White House has demanded that the two men appear jointly in private and not be under oath, with no stenographer, no recordings, no video cameras, no transcripts. And they originally sought to limit the time of questioning and number of questions. Many believe that Bush must have something to hide, is fearful of going it alone, or incapable of answering pointed questions about being personally responsible for one of the greatest national security failures in American history, despite dozens of warnings. Senator John Kerry, the presumed Democratic nominee for president, acknowledged Tuesday that Bush had knowingly exaggerated evidence that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, insisting that Bush had made colossal mistakes before, during, and after the war. "We know they gave misinformation, and yet the president says he's never made a mistake," he said, referring to Bush's statement during a news conference this month that he could not remember a single mistake made during his administration. "I think the president has made some colossal mistakes," Kerry said, "not the least of which is taking our nation to war in a way that was rushed, that is putting our young soldiers at a greater risk than they ought to be, without a plan to win the peace." Planned Parenthood Federation of American President Gloria Felt today demanded that Karen Hughes apologize for invoking 9/11 in her attempt to defend Bush's anti-choice policies. "It is outrageous to suggest that those of us who challenge this administration's attacks on reproductive rights and access do not value life and human dignity. Indeed, it is because we value life and human dignity that we support a woman's right to choice," Felt said today. Speaking in reaction to the more than 1 million men and women gathered for the March for Women's Lives, Hughes had said, "I think after September 11th, the American people are valuing life more."
"It won't happen to me."
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
"It happened to me."
The California State Highway Patrol, hoping to avoid another epic traffic jam, wants inventors to design and build a gun that can capture would-be suicide jumpers in a spider-like web. At this point, we're about ready to put out a request for a proposal, Highway Patrolman Tom Marshall said, and we'll just see if there's some technology that might be usable. The idea was first floated by a local radio talk show host following a 13-hour standoff between cops and a blade-wielding man threatening to jump off the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. The April 2nd incident cost the Highway Patrol an estimated $100,000 in overtime and other expenses. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Murder is not anything I could ever commit, but there are a few individuals whose obituaries I could read without feeling terribly sad. I must admit, however, that one thing does induce murderous thoughts in my otherwise gentle head. Car alarms. Like a demon screeching from the deepest reaches of hell, these satanic devices whoop, beep, razz, whine, and irritate in the most intrusive way, shattering the civility of entire neighborhoods and jangling even the calmest of souls. They seem programmed specifically to go off in the wee hours of morning, rudely awakening families for blocks around in an act of urban harassment. Car alarms are sold in the name of theft protection, but that's a joke. An independent survey of 73 million insurance claims for robbery of vehicles reveals that cars with alarms, quote, show no overall reduction in theft losses. Why? Two reasons. First, nearly all of the whooping is due to false alarms caused by a passing motorcycle, a thump by a cat, or simply because the damn thing decides on its own to interrupt our peace and tranquility. They go off so often that most of us always assume it's a false alarm. An insurance company found that fewer than 1% of people would call the cops because of a blaring car alarm. Second, it's rare to hear an alarm when the car is actually being stolen because real thieves can easily deactivate the devices in only seconds. As one expert puts it, car alarms work about as well as fuzzy dice at deterring theft. Far from stopping crime, they often cause it, as irate neighbors go out in their jammies to puncture tires, sledgehammer hoods, and even shoot the offending vehicles. Plus, all of this is unnecessary, since there are engine immobilizers that can prevent nearly all auto thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help kill screeching car alarms, call Transportation Alternatives, 212-629-8080.
Only one army believes it can win a war. Playing children's games. Please support Salvation Army summer camps and youth programs. To donate, call 1-800-SALARMY or donate online at 1-800-SALARMY.org. We can't win the war without you.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman radio program here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border across the United States on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system. Standard equipment on Chrysler, Ford, and a whole bunch of different Jeep, Mercedes. And beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. With archives at whiterosesociety.org and archives by Mike Toth, TomHartman.com. Welcome back to our program. Today, a lot happening today. One of the more significant things, is the fact that before the Supreme Court, before the United States Supreme Court, the cases of two American citizens, Yasir Issam Hamdi and Jose Padilla, are going to be argued or are being argued. And the government, well, here's the question. Should the United States government have the power to detain United States citizens without right to counsel and trial? I mean, we have this thing called the Constitution. And the Constitution, you know, has this thing called the Bill of Rights attached to it. The Article Amendment 4, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall... I'm sorry, this is a 6, the Sixth Amendment. All the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with a witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Seventh Amendment says that you have the right to jury trial. The Eighth Amendment says you have the right to post bail. I mean, it's just very straightforward. Kit Gage is president of the National Coalition to Protect Political Freedom, a group committed to protecting the rights of citizens and non-citizens' constitutional rights, especially due process and First Amendment rights. She's the director of the First Amendment Foundation, director of the National Committee Against Repressive Legislation, NCARL, a 60-year-old civil liberties group which defends the rights of political dissent, and the executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. Kit, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Say what?
I said it's good to be with you.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. I thought I said I'll be with you in a moment.
I was trying to get rid of my second line, which was ringing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to our program. You have been, you know, clearly following this case. What are you up to date on what happened today before the Supreme Court, or has it happened?
Both arguments were this morning, and I was in front of the Supreme Court with a coalition of organizations who were standing outside and speaking and demonstrating and putting on a little guerrilla theater and generally trying to be present and state our concerns about these cases.
Yeah.
And then I talked to a couple of the people who did sit through the arguments and gave me thumbnail sketches of what went on inside.
Okay, now these cases involve two American citizens, presumably like you and like me, American citizens, who were arrested on American soil. Is that right?
Not quite. Mr. Padilla was arrested at O'Hare Airport. Mr. Hamdi was arrested, apparently, according to the government, on the battlefield in Afghanistan.
Oh, okay. So we've got kind of right. one
so
and
one. Pretty different fact patterns. One of them, Hamdi is... was accused of being a combatant, a fighter for the opposition. And Mr. Padilla, on the other hand, was not in the middle of fighting, wasn't in the middle of committing a crime, was just taken off an airplane and sent as a material witness first to New York, where he sat in jail for a couple of months before getting sent to the brig in South Carolina, which is where Mr. Hamdi was sent after the U.S. discovered in Guantanamo, where he was first taken, that he was a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, wasn't Hamdi the one whose parents were Saudis, but they just happened to be in the United States when he was born? So he
right,
got
it was almost an accident that he's a U.S. citizen, but there are a lot of us accidents wandering around.
There you go.
And happen to be somewhere or another.
Yeah, and a lot of us who have ancestors who had accidents in the United States. So,
exactly.
But with Jose Padilla, my recollection is from the time, I mean, it's been a while. These guys have been in jail almost 2 years.
More than 2 years.
Yeah, okay. Was that one of the things that the government was touting as the evidence against him was that he had been surfing the Internet. He had been looking at websites that had to do with how to construct a dirty bomb. Is that not correct?
There was a memo put together by Mr. Mobbs, which described why it was that Mr. Padilla ought to be put in indefinite detention, and there are a number of allegations that are made against him, and he's called the dirty bomber, he's called a former gang member. None of that has seen the light of day in terms of a hearing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners read the papers and hear all sorts of, depending on what paper they read, lurid accusations of all sorts against all sorts of different people. And sometimes if you wait it out a little bit and after there's been a hearing or a trial or whatever, then they come down and, plead guilty to nothing.
Okay, so Kit, we've got, you know, I find this, there's a strange contrast here. On the one hand, there's a guy who actually was a terrorist bomber, who actually, you know, put together a bomb in the United States with the express intention of causing a crackdown on the government that would bring about a revolution and an overthrow of the United States government, that being Tim McVeigh. He had been reading the Turner Diaries. He put together a bomb, apparently. I mean, according if his trial was, you know, if there was fairness and truth in his trial, I realize there are some people who don't think so, but let's assume for a moment all the facts are as stated. He put together a bomb. He killed hundreds of people. And yet he got a trial. He was a white Christian. Then we've got these guys that are people of color who have not put together bombs, have not killed anybody, and the government says that they should be held indefinitely without right to access to an attorney, without right to a trial, without the right to make bail. What's the difference here?
Well, there are a couple of differences. I mean, one of them was September 11, which was perceived by the U.S. government and the U.S. people, I think, as something much bigger, and by the U.S. Congress, which a week later essentially declared that the president had extraordinary powers to declare war. And it's that declaration by the Congress that the executive branch is hanging its hat on.
It gives
us authority to do anything we want to do.
Yeah, it was to declare a state of emergency, wasn't it? Not to declare war.
You declared a state of emergency, which authorized, a state of emergency, and then later on a war against Afghanistan.
Yeah, or a military conflict, because an actual
right.
declaration of war has never been issued by Congress.
No. I apologize. You're correct. Yeah. But the government has argued that it. From the several congressional authorizations, it has the authority to do what it didn't, you know, what it didn't have the authority to do with Mr. McVeigh, which is take somebody who is accused of plotting to do but not doing, in Mr. Badia's case, plotting to do it, to have some kind of a bomb, but not having carried out any kind of attack, as far as the government says.
Okay, so we have the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, which just, I mean, in absolutely unambiguous language, and it's been followed for 227 years, largely without exception. I mean, there have been blips. There was one during World War II. There was one during World War I. There was a year there during the Civil War. There have been blips, but by and large,
you've got the 1950 Emergency Detention Act
in
the Cold War, which was repealed essentially in 1971 by the Non-Detention Act.
Yeah. So we still have the Sixth Amendment that we are all entitled to a trial if we are arrested, In fact, let me dig that out again. I don't recall if the Sixth Amendment says U.S. citizens or it just says all persons. Perhaps you can tell me. Yeah, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused simply refers to the accused. So,
right.
So to me, this is just mind-boggling that the government would assert that, well, the Constitution doesn't matter here. It's what the president wants, and that's
right.
what it is. I mean, is that really what they're saying?
That is what they're saying, and you know, I think that there's been a trend since September 11 to try to pass legislation and also sort of pass write guidelines and letters of authorization and a variety of things which increasingly give the executive branch incredible authority on its own say so. And I agree with you that I think the Hamdi and Padilla case, especially the Padilla case, is really the point at which you could say, you know, if you don't care about immigrants, maybe you don't care about some of the other stuff that went on. But the Padilla case is your brother-in-law.
These guys are American citizens.
Right.
Yeah.
If the government is allowed, even though there was this extraordinary emergency, if the government's allowed to suspend the Constitution, to not have to justify in any fashion why it's holding these guys and saying it can do it forever, it seems to me there's not a lot left of the criminal justice system, for example.
Well, there's not a lot left of American constitutional democracy. Yeah, you know, the republic is being layers are being peeled back, pieces are being stripped off it and burned or thrown away or whatever metaphor you want to use by this administration. This is absolutely mind-boggling. This is the key to it. It's so important that the rights of these two guys, even if they are just like absolute nasty criminals, be protected, because you never know when the next person accused of a crime might be you or me, God forbid.
Right. Well, the Constitution isn't designed to protect somebody who, supports apple pie and motherhood. It's not, the First Amendment doesn't support people who say things that are innocuous. It supports people who, say obnoxious things. All the criminal justice provisions, again, are designed to protect, the innocent and the guilty.
To quote Jefferson, to protect unpopular speech.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so what's happening with this case here?
They're complicated. They've been up and down, the courts a little bit, even though, with the Guantanamo cases of last week, the question was just whether the courts have jurisdiction at all. In these cases, I think the courts have an opportunity to make some more comprehensive constitutional rights law, but they may choose not to. They can go sort of halfway and say, well, we'll send the Hamdi case back to the lower court, or we're going to send the Padilla case. We're going to send the Padilla case to somewhere else because the name on the lawsuit was wrong. It should have been the guy in the brig in South Carolina, Padilla versus that guy versus Padilla versus Rumsfeld. So, they may just back off and say, oh, we're just going to do the least we have to do here.
Weasel out of
it. Or they may do something comprehensive and say, with both of them, if you're a U.S. citizen, the U.S. can or can't, with some stipulations, hold people indefinitely.
Yeah. What is your sense of what's going to happen on these? Actually, Kit, we have to take a break here now. But right after this, I'd like to get your thoughts on what you think is going to happen here. And the other big question I have for the final 5 minutes here of the segment is what can we as individual citizens do to raise consciousness about this and to help change the direction of government so that these kinds of things don't happen? It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere. A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New research conducted by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University confirms what many workers already know. They're getting the short end of the stick. Since the end of 2001, American workers have had the lowest share of the national income on record, meaning they're producing more and getting less. Corporate profits got a larger percent share of the wealth from increased production. 41% went to corporations, with labor receiving only 38%.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the TuneTracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the TuneTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original TuneTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.TuneTrackerSystems.com. www.TuneTrackerSystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way, and I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103, and I'll gladly park so close to you when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Kit Gage, president of the National Coalition to Protect Political Freedom, a director of the First Amendment Foundation, director of the National Committee Against Repressive Legislation, and executive vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. Quite a CV you have there, Kit.
Well, actually, fortunately, I'm not the last one. That was just too many things to all be at once.
I see. Okay. Well, it's great to have you here. We've got about 4 minutes left in this, and the two questions that I'd laid out. Number one, what do you think is going to happen? And number two, what can our listeners do about this loss of rights here in America?
Right. Well, you know, everybody has their guesses about these cases. During the argument today, when the government, with a straight face, apparently said that it was the interrogator of Mr. Hamdi that could give a fair analysis of whether or not there was a good case against him. And, you know, you can sort of hear everybody's jaws dropping. I think even the Supreme Court is going to say that's not enough, that there has to be some kind of hearing somehow or other to determine what, you know, the fair hearing in some way to determine the validity.
The government's basic argument was that instead of a hearing, you ask the interrogator what he or she thinks, and that
what they found out from the interrogation about this, what this person did or didn't do, and that's how you determine that's a fair hearing.
Well,
I don't think that's going to fly.
I mean, it's how the British did it in 1772, but
yeah, a lot of torturers do it that way too. It's,
yeah,
yeah, you get real interesting results that way.
Yeah, not always
in
accurate.
In terms of what people can do, there's now 295, if the number is at the Bill of Rights Defense Committee website is right, communities across the country that have passed Bill of Rights resolutions that say, in my community, the Constitution still stands. And I, you know, you can go to their website, bordc.org, and find out about all the different efforts across the country. The ACLU is also very active doing this, and many, many of other groups, including my own, have been working hard to build a movement across the country.
And what's the website of your own group?
Firstamend.org and FIRSTAMEND.org and okay. NCARL, NCARL.org.
Yeah, and what about lobbying our local, state, and national elected representatives? What do we say?
Look at these websites, the BORDIC and ACLU.org websites. There are a variety, and there are other groups too. There are a variety of pending bills that will take us a little bit closer back to the Constitution. Again, there's some bad bills too, and President Bush wants to extend the Patriot Act that would have sunsetted. There are some bills to propose and to support, and there's some bills to reject as well.
Yeah, and so there is specific legislation that we can push for.
Absolutely, we don't have the time to describe them, but they're accessible on both of those websites,
sure.
ACLU.org and BORDIC.org.
Okay, and on any of these websites, is there sample language for a resolution that somebody could introduce in their local community?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee website has a how-to toolkit. It has the language of almost all the resolutions around the country. You can compare them. You can see how different people proceed to pass resolutions locally. There's the state resolutions. There's now four of those that have passed are on the website.
That's great.
So,
BORDC.org. Great. Kit Gage, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Appreciate you showing up and your insights and thoughts. Thank you very much. It's
Thanks
the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. April 28th is Workers' Memorial Day, commemorating the 33rd anniversary of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Act. And today, people around the world remember those who have suffered and died on the job. According to government statistics, each year, at least 4.7 million U.S. workers are injured or become sick at work. More than 60,000 die from occupational illnesses, and nearly 6,000 are killed on the job. The AFL-CIO is urging OSHA to examine new workplace hazards and increase penalties for companies that repeatedly break OSHA laws.
American companies can mistreat American workers without fear, so long as it takes place outside the country. Such is the conclusion of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in a dispute between two tree trimmers and their former employer, Pennsylvania-based Asplund Tree Expert Company. The two were fired in 1998 while on a job in Canada and stranded there with no way back to the States. When they did return, the two sued Asplund. A district court judge found the company violated U.S. labor law, and the National Labor Relations Board ordered Asplund to reinstate the fired men. But the appeals court ruled it lacks the power to do that. NLRB jurisdiction ends at the border.
According to the latest issue of Newsweek, American troops in Iraq are fatally undersupplied. The lack of heavy tanks and body armor has led to a record 115 U.S. soldier deaths and 879 injuries in April. Some Pentagon officials blame Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's lighter is better military strategy for the lack of adequate equipment in Iraq. A study by an Army defense consultant suggests that of the 686 Americans killed in Iraq so far, 1 in 4 might be alive today if they had had stronger armor. By the Army's own estimates, they're about 1,800 heavily armored vehicles short. Almost all U.S. soldier deaths have occurred while in unprotected light-skinned Humvees. The Army says it needs more money to protect its soldiers, and the cost of military operations in Iraq is already topping $4.7 billion a month. Adjusted for inflation, the Vietnam War cost about $5 billion a month.
here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the information system will not stop a bar of chocolate. That's the finding of an informal survey conducted in London recently for a European trade conference on information security. Random samplings of people walking through a subway station found one-third of them would freely disclose their office computer's username and password to a complete stranger, and more than two-thirds of those polled broke down if bribed with candy.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud. I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 minutes before the hour.
If I pass this way again, you can rest assured.
The good old Bob Dylan.
I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel-eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the sun.
So, you know, it is, in a way, that's kind of the historic, not to be patronizing or, you know, paternalistic or whatever, but I mean, yeah, historically, I think that Americans have viewed themselves as the people who do offer shelter from the storm, both to our own citizens and to people all around the world. And now, under the Bush administration, people around the world are viewing us as the storm and seeking shelter. And it's a very, very concerning thing. I mean, it's if that's correct English, it probably isn't. You're turning a gerund into a noun or whatever. Anyhow, President, you want to know what's going to be next? If George Bush gets elected in 2004, he has basically laid it out, as the Washington Post reported last week. President Bush told newspaper editors, this is an article by Mike Allen, President Bush told newspaper editors in Washington yesterday that Iran, quote, will be dealt with. Does that sound familiar? I remember, you know, in the early days of the, you know, well, should we go to war with Iraq or not? It will be dealt with. Saddam Hussein will be dealt with. Now, this was not a speech. This wasn't one of those things where, you know, let's get, you know, read it from a teleprompter or whatever. In fact, Bush had specifically said that, you know, he wanted to talk with reporters. This was a, you know, one of these comments. He said, if it does not stop developing nuclear weapons and begin total cooperation with international inspectors, Iran will be dealt with, starting through the United Nations. And the Iranians need to feel the pressure from the world that any nuclear weapons program will be uniformly condemned. It's essential that they hear that message. Well, what about the nuclear weapons program in China? What about the nuclear weapons program in Israel? What about the nuclear weapons program in Pakistan? I mean, you want to look at a terrorist state? Check out Pakistan. You've got more lovers and supporters of Osama bin Laden per square mile in Pakistan probably than anywhere on Earth. And they have an active nuclear program. And not only do they have an active nuclear program, but they've been exporting it. Oh, but they're an ally. But what about China? Threatening Taiwan. The Taiwanese want to have a referendum. They want to say, you know, hey, we don't like the fact that there's some 500 missiles pointed at Taiwan and that China is a nuclear power. We would like to simply have a referendum to say, please, China, don't point your bombs at us. And what happens? China says, if you do that, if you have that referendum, you say something like, you elect an official who says something like that, we will declare that, we will consider that an act of hostility. It's like threatening war. And what does the Bush administration do? They go to Taiwan and they say, stop trying to upset China. After all, our campaign donors, the Walmart Corporation and its friends and family, need China. So do our campaign donors at GE and our campaign donors at, well, you know, actually, I don't know if any of those corporations specifically, but you know what I'm talking about. All these big corporations, so Republican, offshoring jobs to China. If you want to comment on this stuff, by the way, our number 1-866-889-8894. Last July, Bush had said that both Iran and Syria will be held accountable, his phrase, if they fail to cooperate more fully with his program against terrorism. You're with us or you're against us. You're good or you're evil. Actually, the way he said it was, you're either with us or you're against us. You're either evil or you're good. So, I mean, literally, you could say, if you're with us, you're evil. You know, if you want to parse that sentence, it's a stretch. We all know that, you know, he doesn't speak very well. But the thing that I have been getting, by the way, out of reading the excerpts from Bob Woodward's book, I haven't gotten the whole book yet, but, you know, the Washington Post has been printing pieces of it. There have been a lot of pieces and small pieces printed in various places and long commentaries. And listening to people who have read it and, you know, people whose opinions I respect is bringing me back to the position that I had taken on this program up until his most recent press conference when I changed my mind, which is that he is no dummy, and therefore he's far more dangerous than any of us realized. And, you know, I suggested that what he has is not intellectual intelligence, he has emotional intelligence, to use a phrase that Daniel Goleman popularized in his book Emotional Intelligence, EQ. And it's interesting, Chris Matthews, who worked in the Clinton administration, an old Democrat, a competent commentator, somebody who is not a shill for the administration, let's say, talks about how on the occasions that he's met George Bush, Bush made him feel like he was the most important person in the world, like he was his best friend. I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember his exact words. But that he was really there and focused and paying attention, and that he's a smart guy, and that he just doesn't come across well when he gets on camera. And I find that absolutely spooky. Because, you know, it's really interesting. Tina Brown's program, Topic A with Tina Brown, she had on Arianna Huffington, and she had on some apologist for the Bush administration, some other columnist. And the columnist who loved Bush said, well, you know, I read the book, and what I got is that he's a strong and decisive leader, which is what we need in these times, that he knew what he was going to do, and he went ahead and did it. And, you know, he knew he was going to invade Iraq. As soon as he came into office, took him 2.5 years, he did it. No looking back, no regrets. And this guy thought that was great. And Arianna Huffington said, yes, I read the exact same book, and I got that he's a strong and decisive leader. I'm paraphrasing. And she said, and to me, that means he's a dry drunk. He sees the world in black and white. He doesn't understand nuance. He doesn't think things through. He doesn't look at the consequences of things. He doesn't empathize or identify with other people. He's not into sophisticated thinking. He's not capable of understanding the subtleties of a situation. He can't learn from history. I mean, the Ottomans tried to take over Iraq. The British in the 1920s tried to take over Iraq. They both faced exactly what we're facing right now. Bush didn't have time for that. He was too busy being strong and decisive. I find it just fascinating that both the Democrats and the Republicans, people who know George Bush in both parties, are saying, you got to read this book because it accurately describes him. And I think it says something about the American character, or the character of the electorate, and the dichotomy, the polarity that exists in the United States among people. that some people would read this and, I mean, okay, you want a leader who was absolutely decisive, knew what he wanted, nothing was going to stop him or get him in his way. He accomplished what he set out to accomplish. Joe Stalin. Nothing could stop Joe Stalin. In fact, he reinvented himself. I don't remember his real name. It wasn't Stalin. His first name was Joseph, but it was something like Ilyanovich or something. It was much, much longer, and there was a whole bunch of syllables that are difficult to pronounce. He reinvented himself. Sort of, you know, and Bush sort of reinvented himself. I don't mean to draw absolute parallels between Bush and Stalin. The point is that authoritarian, angry father figure leaders appeal to some types of people. Whether it has to do with their upbringing, their neurology, their genetics, I don't know. And other people would prefer somebody, you know, it's the, I forget the guy who popularized it, but it's an old notion in psychology. It, you know, goes back to Carl Jung in many ways. The idea that some people want a strong and perhaps even angry father figure in their lives. And others want a warm and nurturing mother figure in their lives. And that figure can be of either gender. But, you know, that's how it's usually parsed. And what kind of leader does the United States want? Or does, you know, any country want? And it varies with circumstances and times. But I think that there's some sort of a neurological substrate here in people that defines this. I find that absolutely fascinating. You know, at the risk of getting too didactic, in fact, I'm going to move on from that. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Roberta in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Yeah, you were mentioning the nuclear weapons proliferations in the different countries, and I would say, what about the ones in Los Alamos?
Yeah, what about the United States? I mean, and there was a great piece in, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal a day or two ago. Maybe it was the New York Times. I don't remember now. That pointed out that there's 7,000 nuclear warheads pointed at the United States from Russia right now. And some, you know, the equivalent number that we're pointing to them. And that every single day, both our systems and their systems have dozens of false attack alarms. And that the people have basically a minute or two to decide whether or not it's a false attack alarm before the missiles launch. And, you know, every day that goes by. And, you know, the Cold War may be, quote, over, end quote, but the nukes are still there, and they're still pointed at us. And we're still pointing them at them.
Because we're pointing at them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's all such a game, isn't it? And it's a deadly game because they're weapons that really must never be used. You know, this whole thing of Bush's war. I mean, how boring to have to read. Can't you judge a guy by what he does, not by what he says? I mean, he's doing it. He wasn't elected. He's a counterfeit authority, and he's a dictator. He's there he's above the law. He has never looked to the advice and consent of Congress.
If I may, Roberta, I think you're pushing it a little bit. I wouldn't say he's a dictator. I would say he aspires to be a dictator.
Okay. Well, the whole thing is just like Arianna Huffington is so right.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is like a guy in the hood, a wife beating, dog kicking, child abusing, drunk, who calls the police and says, arrest my neighbor, he's got guns. I mean, it's the best defense, a good offense. That
sure
is so reactionary.
Yeah.
That is the oldest game in the book. And this isn't even a good offense, this regime in Washington is doing.
Well, actually, it seems to be. I mean, look at, they've got half of America ready to vote for George Bush right now.
It's not working. You know, what appalls me about people in America, and I don't like saying we, when I'm talking about what certain elements of this country are doing, it's not we, it's them doing it. It's not us. We have no rights. This is corporate rule. It's totalitarian fascism.
Well, I would say, Roberta, we're not there yet, but we're moving in that direction.
Well, you've admitted fascism. It can only
sure
be totalitarian. This whole electoral process is just a game. It's a personality game. Poor Kerry has to walk the line between what he thinks the voters want to hear so the game looks solvent and what he has to say for the Illuminati to let him be elected. And did it ever occur to you, Tom, that Switzerland ever been invaded?
No.
No. Did it ever occur to you that that's where all the bank accounts are?
Sure.
Hello?
Yeah.
Swiss bank accounts?
Yeah.
That's where the Illuminati.
Well, you know.
The world.
Yeah, and if you've ever been to Switzerland,
if
you've ever flown over Switzerland or been in Switzerland, and I've done both, you know that it's a country that would be very, very difficult to invade. I mean, they're way up there
well,
in the mountains.
That's why the bank accounts are there.
There's all these physical barriers to them. They are strictly neutral, and every single man in the entire country is a member of the militia. But,
well, Roberta. Grandmother Elizabeth Bern was from Bern, Switzerland. My heritage is from the other world. But, you know, and I'm really almost ashamed to be from this one. And if it weren't for the fellow who called earlier and had concern about how war affects children, you know, I'm so glad to hear there's one other person in this disunited country that is more concerned that our boys are doing the killing. I'm more concerned that they're killing than that they're dying, because after all, what is death to a Christian?
Yeah. Well,
and when you die killing and murdering noncombatants.
It's coming back to haunt our soldiers as well as the kids in Iraq. I mean, that's the real tragedy as you read some of the stories.
Well, I'm concerned about them all.
Yeah.
And you know, if I were going to read a novel about an interesting and historic benevolent man, I would read a story about this particular Pope. He has called Bush the Antichrist.
And wait a second. Pope John Paul called Bush the Antichrist?
Yes, he has.
Oh, that's remarkable.
And he has done more than anyone in the rest of the world to prevent this war by getting three countries not to sign in. This Pope is such an unusual man.
Yeah, I met him back about four or five years ago. Louise and I were invited to the Vatican and up to his summer palace, Castel Gandolfo, and I actually met him, shook his hand, and talked to him.
Former Boston of Mayor wrote a book about him. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm reading it.
I'm sure it is. Roberta, we got to go we got to take a break here. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others, with the simple message of this book. Let us act, at last, in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New report shows energy development posing a growing threat to western trout streams. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Thousands of natural gas wells have recently been drilled in the Powder River Basin in northeastern Wyoming. They're extracting coal bed methane, a gas trapped between deep layers of coal. Drillers often have to pump briny water from the wells to get at the natural gas. The conservation group Trout Unlimited recently produced a report on the impact of oil and gas development on western public lands. Field coordinator David Stalling says water from coal bed methane wells can harm trout streams and other habitat.
That water they're taking out is real high in bicarbonates and saline, and they're pumping that into some of our rivers and aquifers. And we've already seen, for example, along the Tongue River in eastern Montana, there's been as high as a 75-80% decline in aquatic life. It's also changed the composition of the soil, allowing for noxious weeds to take over from native plants. So that has an effect on fisheries and other wildlife.
Stalling says Trout Unlimited is not opposed to oil and gas development in general, but he says the federal government should not open fragile lands to development.
There really is no lack of natural gas in the ground in places where they can already develop. A study done by the U.S. Department of Energy, for example, shows that 88% of the natural gas within public lands in the Rockies is already available for development. And so that can be developed, and in most cases, 60-something percent of that without restrictions. So we don't feel like they need to go into places like the Rocky Mountain Front or the Upper Green River Basin or the Rhone Plateau to meet our natural gas needs.
Trout Unlimited's report is available on its website at TU.org. That's TU.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 4 minutes before the hour. Yeah, that was interesting, meeting the Pope. Someday I'll tell you all about it. Anyway, it was actually a very unusual experience. President Bush has decided to replace the chief of the National Archives. Now, this was a rather unexpected move. The National Archives were scheduled to start releasing documents from the previous Reagan and Bush administrations about now. I mean, you know, this is the schedule. Documents that included things about Dick Cheney when he was Secretary of Defense, when we were selling weapons of mass destruction to Osama bin Laden, or to Saddam Hussein. See, he's even got me mixing them up. Secretary of State Colin Powell, when he was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, who back then was the Soviet Affairs Director at the National Security Council. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, who was then Undersecretary of Defense for Policy. And Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage, who was then a presidential envoy to the Philippines and the Middle East after serving as Assistant Defense Secretary for International Security Affairs. Now, all this stuff was to come out. And Bush has now replaced the Chief of the National Archives. And as the San Francisco Chronicle reports, in an April 25th article, scholars question changing Chief of Archives. Bush's decision may delay release of documents. President Bush's unexpected decision to replace the Chief of the National Archives has sparked concern among scholars that the switch will delay release of documents from the first Bush administration that might embarrass officials serving in the second Bush administration. Welcome to the Bush administration. You know, if you can't lie about it, you can always cover it up. You can't cover it up, you can always slow down its release. Mind-boggling. Thanks to Louise for producing the program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York for our music. Shelby and RadioPower.org for streaming us around the planet. Ben and White Rose Society. Michael Toth for doing our archives. Thanks to our sponsors for keeping us on the air. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thank you especially to you for listening. It makes it all worthwhile. It's the Tom Hartman Program. That's me. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWI.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the